This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Well, we're going to learn the story behind a book today with my guest who's in the studio with me, Sharon S. Hartley, and we'll start with her in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to mention something that I've been meaning to talk about for a while. And the reason it came to mind was that I was reading this morning, one of the trade publications that Meg Rooley at the Jane Rocheson agency, a really fine agency in New York City, just got a high six-figure deal for a writer named Robert Degani. And he's a writer who I have been trying to schedule to come on the program. So Meg, who is a really great agent, got this deal, and in the article, it mentions that this is for the English rights. And the article pointed out that Amazon Publishing maintains the Chinese, French, German, Italian, Japanese, Portuguese, and Spanish rights. Well, that reminded me of something. I've been asked before about what happens when you have this is for independent authors. If you have a book and you want it, get it translated into another language. When, you know, you'll hear, I was talking to Clive Cussler, and I think his books have been all translated into like 34 languages or something. And he used to have one of every book on his shelf of in every language. But I think it became overwhelming when he hit, 100-some books or something. But anyway, it is really nice for an author to see their book in a foreign language. I know that when I was in Paris, I saw Mary Higgins Clark, one whole shelf of books of hers translated into French. And obviously, she's very popular there. And I've had the funny thing, authors who have been translated into strange languages, and sometimes they don't even know why they've been translated. Albanian. One of my authors was translated into Albanian and still cannot figure out why. But it does remind me of something that I discovered and brought to me by another author, that there is a scam out there. And so for independent authors, when you don't have somebody helping you, when you don't have somebody behind you, and you're all by yourself and you've put your book up on Amazon, first of all, you have to understand what your rights are in regards to Amazon. But there is nothing ever changes in this world. There are scam people. And if you get these letters from Nigeria, which you know are scams, but there are people who target independent writers with a scam to translate your book. And, of course, these people always want a fee up front to pay the translator. Don't do it. Okay. Don't do it. If you're going to sell your rights in a foreign language, work with one of the agents that does this. There are agents who specialize in foreign rights, and you can investigate that and work with somebody. But never, ever, never send any money to Nigeria or to any other country where they say they're going to translate your book. Because, in fact, they might translate the book. But in most cases, they might even use just a computer to translate it. And, you know, translating a book is not an easy thing. It takes a talent to be able to translate a book and still maintain the integrity of the story and the style of the author. So it's not something that just anybody can do. And if you don't know the language, you're really you're taking a chance. And, of course, whenever you're asked to pay a fee up front, and that's the same if you're asked to pay an agent a fee up front, just don't do it. So that's just a little warning to you and something to think about. So if something comes in your mailbox and you're an independent author, that's a good time that you should have a lawyer. And so I will mention that this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they probably should be yours. So, But now I'm going to turn to my guest. I'm so happy to have Sharon S. Hartley in the studio with me. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I think we have to have
move a little closer.
A little closer. Okay. That's right. We want to hear you. Okay, Sharon. As I said, I was so happy. I had read your book. And I think, you know, when we're talking about romance stories, and the minute we say a harlequin romance, we know we've got something special.
Let's
talk about your work and what's happening with you.
Well, I have a new book coming out in October, Harlequin Super Romance. The title is Accidental Bodyguard. And most of my books currently are based in Miami, Florida, which is where I am from. I'm working on a new series that will probably be based in the Tampa Bay area. But what I've got in the pipeline now with Harlequin is all still keyed back in the Miami area.
Well, the book that I read, To Love a Cop,
right?
Of course, it's To Love a Cop, and he is a gorgeous guy. To Trust a Cop. Well, I think I fell in love with the guy, so what can I say? Yeah, To Trust a Cop. Of course, this comes, your whole interest in sort of this area of cops and
law enforcement.
Law enforcement just comes from your background.
Ma'am, my previous work is a court reporter. For 30 years, I ran a court reporting agency in Miami, Florida. And this really informed a great deal of my fiction, some that isn't even published yet, where you would hear court cases and I go, wow, you know, things get sparked in your head. And in the case of Merlene, who is the heroine of To Trust a Cop, she was a private investigator. And I specialized a lot in workers' compensation work where people get injured on the job, and then they file a claim, and then the insurance companies send private investigators out to videotape them doing things they say that they're unable to do. So Merlene, that was her job, but her specialty was catching cheating husbands because that's how she proved that her husband was a cheat.
Was a cheat.
So it was how she found her career.
And it's a fun story, I think. You know, she's got a negative attitude towards cops and
well, that was because of her background.
Yeah.
She came from a very dysfunctional childhood. Her parents were not exactly, you know, parents of the year. And to her, cops were always just coming, trying to take her and her little brother away and put them in protective services, which for the cops, they thought they were doing a good thing. For her, it was like, you're breaking up my family. But she was a child. So she got put into foster home when she was very young and separated from her younger brother. And so she blamed the cops for that. So, yeah, she has no use for cops.
Until she meets the right,
until the she
right
meets the
cops
right cop.
and realizes a lot of things. And, of course, you weave a very nice mystery story along with the romance.
Right. Well, what happens is she is working for her current client, supposedly client, videotaping what she believes is her cheating husband, and she inadvertently videotapes a murder that goes down in the house. And because she has on tape two guys who run in and out, we have a slam dunk murder conviction. But this book,
nothing is slam dunk.
No, it's nothing is slam dunk. So, but that's the way it looks. I'll just give it away. Her client set up the whole thing and murder her husband to get a wonderful.
Well,
life
you know, don't give
policy.
Everything away because it is a story that you can pick up and it's on. Of course, you can buy it
on Amazon. And I think Harlequin, I'm not sure if it's still available on Harlequin or not. You know,
okay.
It's a few years old and they do run out. But it's always available digitally. You can always get it on your Kindle or your Nook or whatever. So.
Well, that's the lovely thing about it, isn't it?
Yes,
that
it is.
Now, of course, you mentioned Harlequin. So, you know, when did you start writing? You had been...
Well, I was a little girl when I started writing, uh-huh. You know, making up fantasies, putting them down, you know, but not real, true writing.
Uh-huh.
But when I got serious about publishing was probably the mid-90s, and it was actually because of my dear, sweet sister who decided she wanted to write a romance, and I said, well, I always wanted to write a romance, so we started doing it together. And we would urge each other on to finish our books. She unfortunately got sidetracked by life and started doing other things, but I stayed with it. And eventually, yay, sold to Harlequin.
So your first book that you published, did you publish it yourself or did
no,
you had funded?
My very first book was published in 1999 by a publisher that was acquired by Mundania, which is an independent digital publisher. But that was in 1999. But it is also still available. It's called South of South Beach. It's set in an area of Miami that at the time I wrote the book was a very depressed area, and now it's like the heart of Miami. It's the heart of South Beach. Things have changed a lot in about 20 years.
So in those days, when you got your first book published, had you done the query route?
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course, yes. You finish a manuscript, and you send out and you query. And that very first book that I queried, I actually got a response from a Harlequin editor interested in it. I wrote a great query. I will sadly admit the rest of the book wasn't nearly as good as the query, and they ultimately rejected it. I mean, I have a lot of rejection letters. I threw away a lot when I moved from Miami to St. Pete, but I still kept a few of them, you know. But after that book in 99, I decided that maybe it was time to go back to school and learn a little bit more about my craft, and it's a never-ending process to keep learning about the craft of writing.
Well, one famous writer who now has sold, I think, like 100 million books told me that he wished he had saved all of his rejection letters and he would have, now he would have them all as wallpaper in his family room because he thinks they're very funny. But that's, you know.
Right. Well, unfortunately, now we get them mostly in email.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get
them. They're not as pretty.
But we can print them.
They're not as pretty. Yeah, because you used to get, in the old days, you'd get rejection letters on their letterhead, which was very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And as an unpublished writer, you sort of grade the rejection letters. You know, if it's a pro forma, just a form letter, you know, that really wasn't so good. But if someone gives you a little bit of encouragement, you know, you hold it so dear to your heart, you know, oh, this, they liked this. And of course, the best sort of rejection letter is something that's a request for revision, and that's how I ultimately published with Harlequin. I had met the woman who acquired me at a conference and pitched the dreaded pitch where you're nervous as you can be and you pitch the book, and she asked to see it, a partial. So I submitted the partial. And then she wrote back and said, well, I liked it. I suggest you make these few changes and send me the complete. So I did what she said. And then she sent me another letter that said, well, I like these changes, but maybe we'll have a few more changes. And it took a long time. And I think part of it is they want to see if you're willing to work with them, if you're going to be willing to accept editorial direction, or you're just going to be, well, I'm sorry, this is my work here, you can't touch it. So I was willing to go with the flow, accept direction, and they ultimately bought the book. So
that was great. So you went straight from straight into Harlequin. You didn't have an agent in between.
No, years ago I had an agent, but unfortunately she was unable to sell a book for me. Well, that's not true. Actually, she sold a book to Kensington to a line called Precious Gems, which was marketed exclusively through Walmart. But Walmart closed the deal before my book came out, so that book never came out. So that was a huge disappointment for me. But that book became To Trust a Cop. It was revised. That book has been revised so many times and ultimately was published as To Trust a Cop.
Well, that's fantastic. So now dealing directly, of course, being a Harlequin author has a lot of, you know, oomph to it.
Well, it was the thrill of my life when Wanda bought my book. I'll have to say that, yes. It was a wonderful, wonderful day. Yeah, it's great. Publishing from Harlequin is wonderful.
Well, they are a wonderful group. And do you do any of the Harlequin events? I know that they do have...
Sure. Well, we just got back from Romance Writers of America annual conference. It was in San Diego this year, and Harlequin throws a great party every year for their authors, and it's always...
That's what I've heard, that their parties are fantastic.
Oh, it's so much fun, and, you know, we get to go, and there's all kinds of chocolate and an open bar, and this... Every party I've been to, they've had the same disc jockey, and we just dance and dance, and it's just a lot of fun. it's just a tremendously, really exciting. And I'm starstruck. Like, I'll see Nora Roberts walk across the floor and like, oh, look, you know, you'll see very well-known authors. But it's fun. Plus, it's also, I write for a line known as Super Romance, and it was wonderful to meet my fellow Super Romance authors. We met a couple of meetings, and we're working on some promotion among ourselves on Facebook and trying to get, you know, it's always trying to get more people to read our books and acquire our books.
And, oh, yeah, the party sounds great. Anything with chocolate and wine,
yes.
you can't go wrong with that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity to meet with the senior editor as well, and it was a wonderful conference. Plus, the weather was fabulous. It was a lot less humidity, a lot cooler, so it was a great conference. RWA is always wonderful.
And at this conference, did you get a chance to meet readers? Were readers invited?
It's less of a reader conference. It's more of an industry conference, mm-hmm. where there's workshops and opportunities to meet with editors and agents to pitch other books. So there's not a lot of it's not a big reader conference, although they do have a book signing that the proceeds for go to a literacy organization, you know, to promote helping people learn how to read.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So I think some readers might turn up for that, but it's basically a conference for romance writer professionals.
And now, do they also help you in setting up other venues where you can
promote the book? Well, there's various other places to meet readers. Does Harlequin itself help me set up book signings? They haven't, no. They do their own promotion through their corporation, and it's up to the individual author to set up book signings and that sort of thing on their own. Yeah.
And I noticed that they do put your book sometimes in combination with other books that sell.
Oh, on Amazon, yeah, they'll bundle it. They'll bundle it, which is great. So if an author that a reader loves is in,
included.
Then it's great for me because it'll up my sales. It'll up my numbers.
And also then you can find new fans, people who might not have, heard about you. They suddenly realize that you're in the same, same league. And it's nice.
And also the other program that Harlequin has that's so beneficial to authors is the direct-to-consumer. There's a great number of readers who buy the entire line every month. So there's 4 super romances published every month, and some readers subscribe to that, so they just get them every month. So that's the beauty of selling to Harlequin is you have a set number of readers that are going to get your book already. So that's very nice.
Well, on the new book that's coming out in October is?
It's Accidental Bodyguard, and it's a sort of a semi-sequel to another book, which was The South Beach Search. In The South Beach Search, I had a missing witness. I had a U.S. attorney who had a very big case going on, and his primary witness went missing. And he didn't know where she was, but she didn't trust the government to protect her, so she went into hiding. And so I always, that story's stayed with me. Whatever happened to Claudia? What happened to Claudia? In that book, The South Beach Search, she did show up and testified, and the bad guy was convicted. But I decided I wanted to know what happened to Claudia while she was waiting to testify. So that's what The Accidental Bodyguard is. She goes into hiding. She was hiding from her husband, who is a terrorist, a domestic terrorist. And he was bad guy, blew up a post office, and so she realized who he was. She turned state's evidence against him, and then they trashed her apartment, and she realized they were going to try to keep her from testifying, and she did not trust the government to put her in a safe house, so she went into hiding on her own, and she meets the hero of that story, who becomes the accidental bodyguard, and it's part of it is set in Miami on an island that I named Collins Island, but it's actually supposed to be, it's similar to, not the same, of an island known as Fisher Island, which is a private island accessible only by boat. You cannot drive on. You have to go by ferry or I guess, seaplane, or jump in on a parachute. So she thought she'd be safe there because they have, obviously, an excellent security system. But they found her.
Okay. So this book sounds exciting. And I think, I know it, again, you can pre-order that on Amazon.
It is available for pre-order already on Amazon. Yeah, absolutely. So rush out and pre-order it.
That's right. It's exciting for an author to see pre-orders coming in. I have to take a quick break, and after that, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the art of writing.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brandvik, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back in the studio with my guest, Sharon S. Hartley, who is here to talk about her books and about writing. But first, before I get back to Sharon, hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hold on a minute. I just want to remind people that on Thursday, August 18th, at Wordier Than Thou Bookstore in St. Petersburg, there's a Joke Masters, a comedy writing workshop. So if you are interested in writing comedy, it's an opportunity to learn something. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. And if you're a writer who's thinking about putting some comedy into your books, you might want to take that course. So get yourself over to the Wordier Than Thou bookstore and try out Joke Masters. It's always good to have some humor in a book, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Comic relief is always helpful, even in what I write, which is romantic suspense. You always have to cut that suspense.
Oh, exactly. Well, that's what Clive Cussler was telling me when I was speaking to him for my special birthday edition for his 85th birthday. And one of the, you know, his books are thrillers, and there's lots of action and lots of guns and lots of explosions, and but there's always comedy.
Yes.
He always puts something in there to sort of break the tension.
I love Clive Cussler. Oh, there's my husband. He's wonderful.
Oh, he's such an amazing man.
Really?
Oh. he's just a fantastic person and absolutely delightful to talk to. And of course, you know, he was the one who really started back in telling authors, you know, to make sure that they pay attention to their cover art and making sure that the covers in a series all were of the same type so that you had a identification with the cover art.
A branding, right.
A branding. And because he had been in advertising before that, and he had won quite a few awards, and so he understood the importance of that. And it was funny, up until that time, publishers weren't even thinking about that.
Yeah, well, on my current books, Harlequin is now calling them the Florida Files. So it's sort of, there's a little box on the covers that's, that draw people to that this is a book about Florida, and it's a file, so it might be something to do with law or a case. So that's very helpful. And, of course, the Harlequin super romances are all a very distinctive orangish color. So, you know, it sort of brands it in the reader's mind, hopefully. Although I don't have a lot of control over my covers.
No, the writers generally don't, but independent authors do.
Absolutely.
And that's why I always tell independent writers, I mean, you really have to be, the cover is important, because it's not true that people don't judge a book by a cover. They do judge a book by a cover, and I've seen examples of very nice books, but the covers are so awful that I am sure, other than myself, because I read anything, I mean, you don't need a cover for me. I'll probably read it if it's, well, I read the back,
read a lot,
you know, anything,
yeah.
You know, the back of packages. I read everything. And so, you know, since I've read about 10,000 books in my life, you can imagine I don't need a cover, but I do still love a good cover.
Absolutely.
And one of the best examples I've seen recently is Delia Ephron's Syracusa. If you haven't seen that cover, it is fantastic, a fantastic example. And 2 weeks ago, I had the people from Penguin, the illustrator, talking about they have a new book out called Cover to Cover. And for independent authors, you should get this book, because it is an inspiration for, well, one, of course, you can always hope that someday you will be one of the Penguin classics, but also that... the examples there of what covers work, and they have stories in there from the illustrator saying why this cover works.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great.
I'd like to read that book.
Cover to Cover. It's a beautiful book. I keep it next to my reading chair just so I can look at it.
Especially for independent authors, that would be very helpful to guide them in the choices that they make.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your whole writing procedure. What do you do? How
do I write?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm one of these obnoxious people that get up first thing in the morning, and before I do anything, well, I make a cup of coffee, absolutely, and then I go upstairs and I write, and I don't turn on Facebook, I don't turn on email before I let anything clutter my mind. I go straight to my fiction, and that's the process that's worked best for me. When I was still a court reporter, I would just grab time here and there to write, but I really became successful after I retired and could devote more time to it. So,
I just wanted to ask, because I've always been interested in court reporting. Were you one of the ones who used that machine?
Stenotype. No, I used what was called a steno mask, where it was just an upgrade in technology where we actually recorded the proceedings. When I first became a court reporter, I'm going to block my face when you won't be able to hear me, but there was a mask that went over like that. And I would repeat everything that was said in the courtroom into this recording.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But it wasn't everywhere, although it was used in the federal government quite a bit. But then when technology continued to evolve, I ended my career with digital recordings. What happened is court reporters are expensive. Someone has to sit there, listen to the proceedings, then they go back, either themselves or a transcriptionist makes a transcript of the proceedings. It's a very timely process. Now, the stenotypist got a little device where it was like could go directly into from their machine to the printed word. And then we got voice recognition where you could do that. So, and then they got digital. So I didn't have – it was beautiful because I didn't have to go sit in a courtroom anymore. I just had a contract with the court where I just got the digital recordings, and either myself or my transcriptionist produced the transcript. So I had less time invested for the same or more money. So it's just – it's everything in life. It's like the e-book. It evolved. You know, things changed.
Because I always wanted to have that machine. Well, simply because I love
– it's a phonetic shorthand. Yeah. I mean, I learned how to use it, but I quickly abandoned it when I thought, this is much easier. I just sit here and talk. So.
Oh, that's fun. Speaking of shorthand, I still love shorthand.
Greg, I learned that too. Yeah. I love that. I can't remember it, but I loved it.
Oh, it's fun. I still sometimes take notes in it. Sometimes I forget what I've written, but I I decipher it after.
And I love the sound at the beginning of your store, your show with that typewriter.
Oh.
And I heard you talking the other day with Linda Fairstein about the Selectric. Because when I first worked as a court reporter, this is before, you know, we could just do it on the computer. You would have to erase on the Selectric. Like if you have an original and you hope two or three copies, because the more copies you have of a court report, yeah, the more money you make. But I can remember erasing if I made an error. And, oh, my God, a computer completely changed court reporter's life, completely changed it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I love that sound of the Selectric.
It is. For anyone who's worked on a Selectric, it's just a sound that, oh, wow, it just sets your heart aflutter, you know. But so you're one of those very diligent authors who...
I get up first thing in the morning, and I don't have lofty goals. My goal is 500 words a day, especially when I'm on deadline. I just figure if I can get 500 words a day, I mean, that's the minimum. And I, of course, shoot for more. It'd be great. And there are days where you do more. But I have friends who produce a lot more. But I have a lot of, I will admit readily, I have a lot of other interests, and I don't want to be all day... In this beautiful place that we live, right here on the Gulf of Mexico, I don't want to spend all day inside.
And the thing is, you need to get out there. It gets you story ideas.
That's right. And you have to refill the well. If you stay all your time in with your computer and Facebook and your friends on email, you're not getting new stories.
So. Exactly. Well, again, that's good advice Clive Cussler gave a writer, said, go out and live, you know, do things.
Absolutely.
Do different things, because when he had been a mechanic on a flight line, he hadn't planned to become a writer. But then he did one thing after another, he took up scuba diving. Next thing he knows that he's interested in submarines. Next day. So by the time he's ready to write, he has all this background and can just
draw on that.
Weave it all into his book seamlessly. So it's not that he doesn't have to do, you know, research something. He's done it.
He's done it.
And
right.
So it gives a reality, which is why people love his books and why he sold a quarter of a billion books.
Oh, is that many? Wow.
Can you imagine? A quarter of a billion.
I can't imagine.
You know, that's so many books. But again, because it's easy for him to write about these things because, as he said, he's lived all of these things.
Yeah, he has that in his background, so he can draw on it.
Exactly.
That's great.
Exactly.
Well, I have other things in my background besides. But the thing about court reporting is every case was different. You never knew what was going to happen. So there's, you know, one of my favorite stories, and I have not published this story yet, but it's still out there being circulating, was I worked for a federal grand jury, and I'll never forget this day. The U.S. attorney came to me before I was going to take the testimony of this witness, and he said, Sharon, go home, produce this transcript immediately. There's a hit out on this guy. If he's gone, this testimony is the only evidence that we have of this testimony. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. I went straight home. I didn't go to bed. I got that transcript done and got it back in the very next morning. I was so glad to get that out of my hands. So, but that starts the what if idea. You know, what if something happens? So I wrote a book where this poor little court reporter ended up having the bad guys come after her because they think she knows where the witness is in the safe house, where he's in hiding. None of that happened to me, I can assure you. But it was a fun thing for me
to write. Again, it gave you a great, great story idea. I love it. And, of course, today we're particularly interested because a certain DA just got convicted of leaking grand jury testimony, which, you know, it's mind-boggling when you think about a DA doing that.
Right. I had to go and be sworn to secrecy before every grand jury. I did federal grand jury, though. And we weren't even supposed to talk among ourselves, other court reporters who might have worked on the same case. It was all supposed to be absolutely secret. I mean, that's the whole grand jury system. I missed that work. That was fun because I was living in Atlanta.
So you were privy to some good stuff.
And we read things in the paper that were completely off base or maybe hit it a little bit and go, well, we know the truth. You know, it was fun. That was fun. But I never, ever leaked a thing. Never a thing.
Well, that's good because I think a certain DA is going to prison for a long time. Because
that's very strange.
They're supposed to know better than to do things like that.
Right. Another grand jury I was living in Atlanta while, Jimmy Carter was president of the United States. And I don't know if you remember this, but there was a situation where they were investigating his peanut farm down in Plains, Georgia. You remember his brother? I took the testimony of Billy Carter in front of the federal grand jury, a highlight of my life, I can assure you. It was so funny. He was a character, I can tell you.
Oh, yes. He had his own beer, I believe.
Billy Beer.
Billy Beer. I never had. But I did know somebody who had, was very, as a matter of somebody who lives in Daytona, has an old can of Billy Beer, and very proud of it, and keeps it. Maybe it'll be very valuable.
Maybe it'll be collectible someday.
Well, I think it's already collectible. Well, I think I saw that an autographed book by you is on eBay.
By me?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
One of your books, autographed, I think it's selling now for $10 or something like that. So, you know.
I didn't know anything about that. That's thrilling.
So it's become a collectible. Isn't that exciting?
That is exciting, to tell you the truth. You never dream. When I was a little girl, you think, you make up little stories in your head. And I'm a reader all my life. I tell people the story that my mother would look for me to do something, and I was usually hiding somewhere with a book. There was a little bathroom that I could go to because it had like a door that you could shut, and I would get in there and I would be in a book. Because once you get started with a great book, I mean, even today, you don't want to put it down. You just want to finish the book.
Yeah, I'm aware of that problem. it was funny. Like a few months before I started this program, I had made a resolution. Because I started the program on March 17th, which happened to be St. Patrick's Day. And in my resolution on January 1st had been to cut down on my books. And then I started this program, and now I get boxes of books all every week. You know, and I don't know what I'm going to do with all these books, but it's lots of fun.
Well, you could donate them after you're finished.
I do. And I give them away to listeners. As a matter of fact, if you're a listener out there and you're interested in a book, just send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I'm sure I have a book that you will like. So tell me what kind of book you are interested in, and I'm happy to send you a book, or you can come by the studio. I'm looking for some readers to come in the studio to talk to me about their favorite books. So you could also send me an email about that. I'd love to have you in the studio, and I can give you, I've got all sorts of books, from romance and thrillers, sci-fi, self-help, kids books. Oh, I love kids books. I have some wonderful kids books. And I've spoken to some wonderful authors of kids' books. So
that could be an interesting program, to have readers.
That's what I want.
Express to you problems they have. I would like to hear that.
Yeah, because I think that you learn a lot from your readers.
Absolutely.
And it's fun. I don't know, as I said, about going to book signings, book fests. Beach Babes Book Blast in Tampa. Are you going to be part of that? That's a romance.
I'm unaware of it. Well, I'm new to the area.
You're new to the area. Well, then I will have to send you some information. The Beach Babes Book Blast is going to be in November, and I hope you will be at that.
Oh, I'd love to.
I'm going to be a sponsor. Last year I was there, and it was an amazing event. There were, I think, 65 romance authors.
Oh, wow.
And the most beautiful thing was that the readers would just line up, you know, for so long to get a selfie with the author.
Oh, with the author. Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I loved all of it. I met so many wonderful romance authors there. But my favorite romance author, well, I don't know. I'm not making a joke of her, because I mean, I think she's absolutely delightful. She brought down three of her cover art personality. Her hunks. She brought three hunks with her. Well, of course, she was very popular.
She got a lot of attention, no doubt.
And I think it's a wonderful thing to do. So, you know, if you have, well, as I said, you know, I say to Love a Cop was the name of your book, because I think as I'm reading it, I mean, that was it.
Yeah, well, you know, cops are getting kind of a bad rap these days. There's all this controversy.
Oh, no, that's so silly. So. It's so silly. And
but we have to support our law enforcement. Oh, absolutely. They put their lives on the line for us.
Oh, they are.
Day.
They are. And I have met some really fantastic hunks and who really make great calendar art too. So absolutely. So it's fun that you get to do this. I think, you know, this whole background of that you have of being a court reporter is a unique.
It's an interesting way to the other thing I did was too. I went to as many citizens police academies as I could get. I went to the FBI police academy where for you know everyday citizens can go and learn about police procedure.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful. I went to the Miami Beach, Miami-Dade County, then my little city that I lived in also. And I'm going to start going to ones in this area. I'm sure that they have them. It's a wonderful liaison between the police and the everyday citizen. And in light of all this unfortunate publicity, I think it'd be wonderful for people who want to understand how police departments work. To do that. And I wanted to give a little plug to Tara, which is Tampa Area Romance Authors, which if there's any romance or even any authors out there interested in connecting with authors, because writing is often done in a vacuum. You know, we sit at our computer now and we're writing all alone, but it's good to connect with other people who understand the particular challenges that we face with our chosen path. So it's always a good idea to look for a writing group. The mystery writers have them and the romance authors have them as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Anyone who's a writer that's looking for a way to make some connections.
And it's called TARA?
It's the acronym is TARA. It's Tampa Area Romance Authors. To be a member, you have to be a member of the national organization, which is Romance Writers of America. But they are the most generous and helpful group. It's like when I first joined, I thought, why are they being so nice helping to train the replacements? But romance writers are the most generous people.
Oh, they are. They are. They're very helpful to each other.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful network of help. So, and it's wonderful. I've made some of my best friends. And another thing I always like to suggest to anyone who's writing and looking to further their career is to look for someone to critique with. Like, I was in a critique group for years. Now, it's not good to have your mother critique you or your sister, maybe not even your best friend unless she's also a writer, because they're only going to say nice things.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, you know, but if you want to progress and actually gain something from a critique, you want to have someone who's going to be honest with you.
And that reminds me, I wanted to talk about the sort of editing process. You mentioned it briefly, but one of the things that authors have to understand is that you do have to work with an editor.
Right, yes. I have an editor at Harlequin. She is wonderful. You know, and I had heard horror stories about editors, how mean they are, but my editor is the kindest person. In the way she expresses something to me, like if she wants to make a change or an editorial comment, is so kind. And she gives me positive feedback along the way. So I couldn't be any happier than I am with who my editor is. So all those horror stories aren't necessarily true. And she's made my books better. I honestly do believe that. Of course, we all believe our babies or our, you know, our children and are perfect. But they're never perfect. And so she's made suggestions that I honestly believe have made my books, better reads for my readers.
And that's what you're looking for. Because, you know, I don't know where this idea that the editor was the bad guy is sort of in between you getting your book printed, you had to face this, because they're not. I mean, they're interested in the best for you because it reflects on them, and they're always very encouraging, and they never want to change the integrity of your work. You know, it's not to, you know, but they do want to help you to focus sometimes on areas that. Sometimes some writers are better at description and some are better at dialogue. And so sometimes I think one of the comments that I've spoken to some editors and they're saying that's where they find they, you know, have to come in and they'll say, well, you know, boy, that's wonderful dialogue. But when you come to the description, you don't perhaps have quite enough. And so you can just work with the editor on that, and they help
right.
you.
And we're so close to our work. You know, we've created it. It's come from our head, through our fingers, onto the screen. And, you know, you lose perspective, I think, sometimes when you've worked with a book for so long. And I actually find it helpful because I send off my book, you know, at my deadline, and it's completed. And then I immediately have moved on to another book. And so then there'll be a gap between when my editor gets back her revision letter or her editorial comments. And that's a healthy thing. Even if you're not published and you finish a book, I recommend putting it away as long as a month. Give yourself some time, give yourself some perspective, and then you go back and look at it. And two things can happen. Oh, this is really good. Did I write this? Or, ooh, you know, maybe, you know, in different sections, work needs to be done. I mean, we all can benefit from a little perspective, I think.
Well, I think that's a great idea, and it's something that authors have to, you know, think about and have this. You know, writing is not a solitary thing anymore because you really have to have a game plan. You have to be out there and. What about you? Are you promoting yet?
I am very difficult at self-promotion. I have trouble going and saying, oh, buy my book. It's wonderful. I don't know. Maybe it's because as I grew up, my parents said, you know, don't always toot your own horn. I don't know what it is, but self-promotion is very difficult for me. Maybe it's a lack of self-confidence. I don't know. You know, I love my books. I think they're great. But it's hard for me. It's even hard for me to go to my friends and say, buy my book. You know, here, I'll just give them a copy.
Oh, no. Well, a very famous author who has many, many bestsellers, she told me she never gives away a book. I mean, she just won't give it, you know. I said, well, not even to me. And she said, no. I said, well, I think you're going to make an exception. And actually, she did make an exception because she liked her interview on my program. And so she did send me a copy. But she really doesn't give her books away because she's...
And you should buy them, right?
Buy them.
I get that whole idea. I wish I were more like that.
Well, and I have spoken to a few writers who have really by setting themselves a business plan that this is how many books they're going to sell this month.
Wow.
A real business plan.
Wow.
And when I first heard that and I said, well, what do you mean you set a business plan? She said, I do a business plan. I have a real professional-looking business plan. And on my business plan, and she has quite a few books she's written now, I have to sell, you know, 400 of this book. I have to sell 300 of this book. I have to sell that
That's
month.
Excellent. We should all do that.
And so I said, well, how do you do that? She said, well, it's, you know, it's not always easy. Every month isn't easy. But if she has this business plan, then she says what she's done is managed to focus herself, and whether it's going to events, whether a book fest, whether it's going to set up speeches, which is something we're going to talk about in an upcoming program about setting up events. A writer has to set, even when you're with somebody big like Harlequin,
absolutely,
they don't set up your events for you.
No.
You have to set up your events.
Yes. That's right. And since I've moved, I've been finding it difficult to get things. You know, in Miami, I had a lot of contacts, and it was a little bit easier. But so I'm having a little trouble getting off the starting line here, but I'm working
on it.
Well,
you're working on it, and that's one of the things I hope in the fall. I'm going to have a meetup for authors to talk about what I've learned from the people who have been really successful in promoting their books, because this is an area that writers really have to focus on when it doesn't matter if you're with a publisher, even with a big publisher, you still have to, you know, after the initial run of publicity with a big publisher, it's over.
Right.
But you don't want your books to stop selling. You don't want them to stop selling. Now, unless you're a Clive Cussler, where people go back over and over to get your books, you don't want them to forget you. So with a big publisher, you might have 6 weeks of great sales and then it's going to drop.
Absolutely.
And you don't want that.
No, and the beauty of the new digital age is your book is always out there.
It's there.
If you want to keep promoting, it's always available for readers to buy. I love that.
Well, that is a fantastic thing. And one of the things I like to interview people whose book hasn't been published recently. I mean, it's easy to talk to somebody whose book came out today. But it's exactly this, that the book is there. And I hate to see a book out there. It's been there maybe for a year or 2 years, and nothing's happening with it. No, like, I can tell by, because I see that on their Amazon page, nobody's reviewed it in 2 years. Nobody said any, made any comments for 2 years. And I say, whoa, I don't like this. This is a good book. Somebody should read this. Somebody should be reading it. So you have to, so authors have to do this. And as I said, setting up a real business plan for yourself. And this is the number of books that are going to be sold. By hook or crook, whether you're going to, you know, go around. I mean, I know authors who just keep books in the back of their book, car, and they do, you know, street fairs if necessary.
Yes.
But and this woman did, and I mean, she's now, she's making money.
Yeah.
She's done this.
I have a former critique partner who is the best planner and has a business plan, and she's always promoting. And I always look and I wish I could be more like Nancy.
Well,
and I shall. You have inspired me, Patsy.
Okay, well, I hope better. So. And one of the things, of course, we're hoping here at the local level, we have now the Book Nook. The
Book Nook, yeah.
At Miami Avenue, and it's Miami Avenue Wine Bar. Music and the Arts.
It's a beautiful little venue. It's so fun.
Isn't it? And it's so beautiful. And the owner, Bev Malley, is so supportive as she wants to help local authors find an audience. And exactly one of the things is authors who have been published for a year or 2 years or 3 years, but their books aren't out there. And so we want to...
It was so wonderful of you to do that, to set that up.
Well, we're hoping that it's going to be a big success. The grand opening is next Wednesday, August 24th at 1 p.m., and we invite everybody to come out and meet the authors. We have Sharon's going to be there, Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, is going to be there.
Exciting.
Carol Perry, who's a fantastic Witch City Mysteries. She's now on her fourth Witch City Mystery, and they're really great books and really cozy mysteries, wonderful. In the sort of tradition of Carolyn Hart, just wonderful mysteries, and so many other authors are going to be there. So
it's going to be a great event.
Yeah,
it really is.
It is.
So everybody come.
Exactly. Everybody come and get a picture, get a selfie with an author, and authors love it because when a reader takes a selfie, they send it to somebody, and then somebody sends it to somebody, and it keeps.
And we love to meet our readers. To meet our readers.
I know.
That's a thrill.
Isn't it a thrill when somebody comes up and says, I read them?
I know. It's like, oh, you actually read my book?
or now listen to it. I like the Audible.
Oh, I do too. I love to listen to books. I in my car, whenever I'm on a trip, I'm listening to a book.
And the Audible version of To Trust a Cop, and I've got the title right this time, although it is To Love a Cop. To Trust a Cop is available, and I think it's a great book to have on Audible.
Patsy. Yeah, it would be a fun book for Audible.
Yeah, I like it. I like it on Audible. So just, you know, I'm really, really thrilled that you came in the studio today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, and I'm going to see you on Wednesday at the opening of the Book Nook. And everybody, just remember that you are the joy in somebody's life. So take care of yourself and call up somebody you love and tell them something nice and just put some joy in their life, too. So I just want to thank you again, Sharon, for being in the studio. And for everyone, just have a great day today. Tonight, as a matter of fact, is karaoke night at the Miami Avenue. So if you're in the mood for singing. And meanwhile, I look forward to seeing everybody back here on Thursday at 11 o'clock here, right here at 10 Talk Studios. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.